I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to minute 25 of season 6 of Movie Raw Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capricious journey through the 1946 classic It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off week number 5 is Tierney Steele of many different podcasts, including, or most recently, the Apocalypse Now Minute. Welcome back, Tierney.
Hey, thanks for having me back. Yeah, it's always hard when people ask me, oh, what show are you from? And I'm like, way too many.
No such thing. Do you really believe way too many? Or is it just too many to start elaborating? There's a difference.
Good point. Yeah, too many to give a resume.
Okay. All right. That's fair. It would take too long to give the resume, you're saying. But that's what your website's for. That's what IMDb is for. You know, you have all these different places where people can go to see all of the things. You can just say, you know, go to this site. Like you've told people all week, go to your site and you can see everything that you've been on. So, you know.
This is also very motivating for me to go and like make sure it's up to date. You know, check the links and stuff like that. The little maintenance stuff you have to do. It's always nice when I've guessed it on something and it's like, all right, I got to go check that the website's in good shape.
Okay, that's actually good. So, it gives you a chance to make sure everything is refreshed properly.
Yes. But checking his website is not something George Bailey had to worry about. No.
Especially he's just a little too wet at this point. But minute 25 begins with the teachers who are shocked and laughing. Some of them are shocked and some of them are laughing at what's going on. And we hear people splashing in the water. And it ends with an age-old question. So we will have to wait and till the end of the minute to find out what that age-old question is. So we ended things yesterday with the pool party where, you know, we saw that George and Mary fell into the pool and continued dancing with Mary continuing to laugh. And we ended things with the principal diving or fake diving into the pool. You know, we hear the... today's minute begins with the payoff for that joke where we hear the splash of him apparently diving into the water.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a nice way to cap off the scene. I like the way they did it.
And then we move into the next perfect scene from this movie.
That's right. That's right. Where it opens up the, first of all, we get about 4 seconds of a black screen. You know, I guess they really want to establish that there is, that this is a completely new place and scene and everything like that. You know, it takes them 4 seconds, I guess, for the characters to, you know, when you're watching a play, you know, and the lights go out for a few seconds in order to change around the set, you know, so it feels that that's what they're doing here, you know, and then we hear whistling and singing, you know, I guess you could say the lights come back up. And we see George and Mary dressed very strangely. You know, George is in a football outfit and, you know, Mary is dressed in a robe.
I'm assuming that's from like the boxing team. You know how they have the robes for the boxers?
You is that what you think it's from?
Who else would have a robe? Who else would have a Bedford Falls High bathrobe.
I thought maybe department. I actually was thinking that it's from like the swimming team, you know, that they had robes for them to put on after they go swimming.
That could work too.
You know, but it doesn't really fit her either, you know.
Well, no, but I either do, but that's part of the charm.
That is true. That is true.
And they're singing to each other.
Yes, they're singing the song "Buffalo Gals." Are you familiar with the with the song from anywhere else besides here? Like, do you know anything about the song?
So I am familiar with the song from, not from this movie, but it was inspired by this movie. I'm not sure if that's cheating. I mentioned at the beginning of this week watching My So-Called Life with my grandmother, and we loved that show. We watched it all. I think we wrote a couple times things got canceled, and we wrote like to the company. It was like, please keep making this show.
Did it ever work?
It never worked. My So-Called Life was made by the Bedford Falls Company, which means at the end of every single episode of My So-Called Life, it would cut to a shot of it's the house from above with just like one light on, and it go and dance by the light of the moon every single episode. This is the same company. They also did 30 something, and I'm blanking on what else, but there was something else that like is recognizable as a known entity, but My So-Called Life was it for me. And it's, you know, when you watch shows and you get so used to the noise that comes at the end of the show from the production company, that then if they don't do it, you're really freaked out. Or like when they change the credits music and the DVD, it's like, oh my God, what are you doing to my brain? And that to me, like this little Buffalo Gals is so My So-Called Life to me. And it's because it's the Bedford Falls Company.
That's right. Okay, so the lyrics go, Buffalo Gals, won't you come out tonight? Come out tonight. Come out tonight. Buffalo Gals, won't you come out tonight and dance by the light of the moon? So do you know when this song was originally written?
No, I assumed you would do research.
Yeah, and I did. I did. 1844. Wow. It was originally known as Cool White. And it was sung by a man named John Hodges. It was created by him. It was written, published, and created by him. And basically, they would alter it for wherever, you know, different parts of the U.S. For instance, in New York, they would sing New York Gals. And then in Boston, they were known as Boston Gals. In Alabama, Alabama Gals. There was actually a recording in 1959 by Alan Lomax and Shirley Collins, where they called it Alabama Girls. But obviously, the best-known version is the one here, Buffalo, which is Buffalo, New York. I never knew that. I always thought, no. I always thought it just meant like, you know, Buffalo, you know, like the animal Buffalo, you know, Tatanka, as Dances with Wolves would say.
No, I think because like I knew people from Buffalo, like I knew New York, and so the fact that it's like New Bedford, New York, Buffalo, like that just made sense in my brain. I never questioned that. I was a kid. I tease my friend who's from Buffalo all the time. When I was really little, I basically thought Buffalo was the North Pole. Because the only time I ever saw pictures or video of it on the news was when it got like, you know, 15 feet of snow or something ridiculous like that. And so I was like, yeah, that looks just like the North Pole. So that's where Santa's from. And now I'm friends with someone from Buffalo and I love to tease her mercilessly.
I would think that she'd tease you more the fact that you think it's the North Pole.
No. She's not fazed by winter.
Yes.
In okay. the way that I am.
I understand that. I grew up in Detroit. I in the same way, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm slightly familiar with what a winter is. I now live in a warmer climate where the winters aren't as bad. But when I see people who are cold here, I say you don't know what cold is.
Yeah. That's, my dad grew up north of Chicago, so lake effect was a big discussion in our house. But I grew up along Long Island Sound, which is a nice mediating effect. Never gets too hot, never gets too cold.
Right. So, okay.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about mid-Atlantic weather.
Sure we are. We're here to talk about everything. That's the way this works.
We're here to talk about how Mary's hair is way too nice for having been dunked in that pool.
Okay, that's one thing we can talk about. We can also talk about the fact that the clothes that the two of them are wearing don't fit at all. I mean, George is
No.
holding up his pants because they're so big, they're about to fall down. But I wanted to actually focus on the fact that he has a number three on his shirt. Okay, so obviously he's wearing a football uniform from that time. And so it got me thinking about, like the whole idea of numbers on jerseys and things like that. I did a little bit of research on who are the best athletes who wore a number three jersey. Okay, can you think of any before I go into the list?
Not for football.
No, not necessarily football. I wasn't talking about football. It could be
Oh,
any sport.
Babe Ruth.
There you go. Okay. I knew I knew you're a baseball fan, so I knew you'd go
Yeah.
there.
I was
Yes,
actually
so
just reading about the photo with the big three on the back.
there you go. So Babe Ruth, the home run king, had the record for the most number of home runs for a very long time. What was it, about 80 years that he held it? No, maybe a little less.
Oh, no, but it was a long time.
Yeah.
And
So,
he's
right.
still a top dog.
Yes, for sure. He's number two, for the most home runs. I'm not talking about in a season. I'm talking about over his career. So Babe Ruth wore the number three, the New York Yankee player. He played from 1914 to 1935. He won the World Series seven times. His number three jersey was retired by the Yankees. Another Yankee who started his career with the number three is A-Rod, Alex Rodriguez. He had the number three jersey when he was playing for both the Seattle Mariners and the Texas Rangers. But when he joined the Yankees, he couldn't get that number because it was already used and retired.
Wow, I didn't even realize that. That's
Yeah.
cool.
Do you know what his number was? What number he took when he went to the Yankees?
I don't remember. You're gonna tell me, and I'm gonna be like, I knew that, but I don't.
13. He was unlucky number 13. But
13. See, I love the number 13, so
okay.
I don't know.
I wasn't stating, whether I think it's unlucky or not. It's just known as an unlucky number.
Yeah.
Whether it is or isn't, but the fact that he was a 14-time All-Star and three-time American League MVP and World Series champion, he probably isn't too worried about the fact that maybe the number 13 is not necessarily a good number. Basketball. So you have Allen Iverson, played in the
Okay.
NBA, started he was drafted in 1996. He played for Philadelphia 76ers, and he was also the number three. In professional football, if you go really far back, you have a player named Bronco Nagurski, who was a Hall of Famer,
That's a cool name.
who won two NFL championships, and then he ended up moving on to becoming a professional wrestler. So yeah, that's then Chris Paul, also a basketball player. He played for the New Orleans Hornets and the LA Clippers, and he was his nickname was actually CP3.
Nice.
Yeah, who else we got here? Jimmy Fox, who
I
was the
just was looking at Red Sox number threes, and Jimmy Fox was the first one that came up.
There you go. Yeah, so he played for both the Philadelphia Athletics, Boston Red Sox, and so he was also number three. Who else do we have? There's a whole bunch of other players that had the number. Alan Trammell. That's just from my Detroit upbringing, so I bring that back up. He was the shortstop for the Tigers in the 80s. Bryce Harper, Harmon Killebrew. So there are some players from back then that used the number three. Yeah, so the two of them are walking through what you can clearly see is a set. You know, because the bushes on the side look really, really fake as they're walking and singing. You know, and they're both carrying their wet clothes in their hands. You know, he's got his tux, you know, bundled up, and she it I don't know if it's such a good thing for her to be, you know, holding her dress this way. You know, I don't know if it's a very good thing for the dress in the end that, you know, she does that.
I
Who
think if this
knows?
dress is donezo, it was already donezo. You know, like her rolling it up into a ball isn't gonna do more harm than the pool did.
That's probably true. That's probably true. And then George says to her, "Oh, hot dog, just like an organ." Now I have no idea what he's talking about there, but you know, maybe it's his way of expressing that she sings as well as an organ would sing. You know, if you're playing
Yeah,
an organ.
I think they're making fun of the way they're singing.
Yeah.
That they sound like a wheezing organ or something.
Could be. And she responds, "Beautiful." And then he looks at her and says, "I told Harry I thought I'd be bored to death."
I love that. I had that line noted down.
Yeah.
He's just so shocked, like, this worked out. And then yeah, he says, I guess I'm not quite the football type. That was the other one where I'm like, you did a good job,
Well,
buddy.
before he says that, he says to them, "You should have seen the commotion in that locker room. I had to knock down three people to get the stuff we're wearing here." You know.
This is a great example of like movie make. You know, like I appreciate a movie that tosses in the line to explain how something happened. I
That's right.
appreciate that.
That's right. Just to say
Again,
that
I
they.
could have used a line on where Marty was at the wedding.
That's right. But it wasn't as important as explaining how, because this shows how chivalrous he is. You know, the fact that he was willing to fight three other guys in order to get, you know, a robe for Mary.
Yep. And he gave her the better option.
Well, I don't think he would have given her the football uniform. You thought he would do that?
Well, if he didn't have anything better,
Ah, okay.
I think of the football uniform and a robe, he gave her the better option.
That okay. Well, yes and no. You know, we'll talk more about that next week as to which is the better option. I don't know. You know, but still. And then he says, "Let me hold that old dress of yours." And then she looks at him and goes, "Do I look as funny as you do?" And he goes, "Well, I guess I'm not quite the football type." And then she says, "You
That's
look
very sweet.
wonderful." And he goes, "You know, if it wasn't me talking, I'd say you were the prettiest girl in town." "Well, why don't you say it?" "I don't know. Maybe I will say it." You know, he's definitely less oblivious today than he was the rest of this week. You know,
I
he's
love their flirting.
yes.
Say, like, no wonder everyone fell in love with Donna Reed. Like, I get it. I get it watching this minute.
Yeah, and it's also because of the banter between the two of them is written so well, and they both deliver it so well that it's so believable that these two people have been she's been eyeing him for years, and he's noticed her but hasn't really noticed her until now.
And now he notices her.
Exactly. And then she then you know and by him saying maybe I will say it, you know, he's teasing her also. He's like, you know, if I was someone else, maybe I would say that, but I don't know. Who knows? And then he looks at her and goes, "How old are
George
you?"
Bailey's got moves.
That's right. And then he says, "How old are you anyway?" It's pretty funny that he actually needs to ask this question. Again, this is more for us than for him or for her. And then she goes, "18." He goes, "18? Why? It was only last year that you were 17." So, and not only is he not only does George Bailey got moves, but George Bailey also knows math.
I think there might have been a moment where he was like, I'm getting along with this girl. This is great. And then he's like, wait a minute. Was she Harry's age or was she younger? Because if she's younger, I'm in trouble. Like, before this goes any further, I better make sure.
That's true, awesome. Yes, he should be very, very careful here.
The fact that he says, like, why it was only like that makes me think he was thinking about, you know, like, oh no, I better make
but
sure.
But do you think he's asking this seriously, or do you think it's more of his way of joking around with her? I have trouble believing the
I don't
fact.
Know.
I have trouble believing the fact that he's saying this seriously. You know, I don't think he's thinking of, you know, statutory at this point. That's not what's going.
Joke? But like, if it's to flirt with her, why?
Because I think that the joke is that, you know, he has noticed her but hasn't noticed her, or you can say the other way, he hasn't noticed her but noticed her. You know, I think that's what it comes down to, and he's basically saying, "How old are you? You know, like, how come it's taking me so long to actually notice you?" I think that's more along the lines. Again, I don't think George Bailey is a guy who first and foremost is thinking, okay, is this going to be considered statutory? I don't think so.
Well, I don't think that's the word he would use. But
no, probably
he might be like,
not.
Wow, I really like her.
Jailbait.
And then all of a sudden look at her and be like, oh crap.
Yeah. Should we say jailbait? I don't think that's what he's thinking, you know, by that. I think he's got much purer motives at this point.
Aww.
You know, I don't think, I mean, I've heard people that have problems with this part of the movie because they think they're looking at it from the perspective of today, you know, where they say, oh, this is wrong. George should not be acting this way. And I personally have I have a little bit of trouble with that because I think this is all being shown in an innocent manner. I don't think that it's
she's
predatory.
18, he's what, at most 22? At most, probably.
No, well,
more like
we know exactly how old he is. He's
That's
20.
Not a big deal.
He's 20 or 21, depending on when he was born.
Okay.
He was born in 1907.
And she's 18.
That's right. Yes, but I've heard people who have told me that who have said to me that they don't like these scenes because it's very predatory, the way that he acts, especially with things that happen next
week.
You know, so
well, I mean, okay, yeah, I won't spoil next week, but
right. But again, I have trouble believing that's what was meant here. And that it's harder for me to look at it and say, oh, well, okay, that was just wrong the way that they did it. You know, I think it works really well. And I think it was done all in an innocent way. But who knows? Maybe next week we'll get deeper into that, into that theory. You know, we'll have to wait until next week. Yeah.
Yeah. For now, we're still good.
Yeah, exactly. right. So basically this establishes that Mary is, Harry's age, you know, this is her graduation or whatever, you know, because of the fact that she's 18, unless she either skipped a year or was left back a year or something like that. But, you know, again, I don't think we need to get too far into the math of the whole thing. I think we can look at it at face value and say, okay, so, you know, Marty and George are the same age, and both George's parents and both of Mary's or Marty's parents waited 2 years and then had their next kid, you know, that type of thing, so that they all match up. And, you know, as far as we know, each of the family only had two kids, you know, that was it, you know.
Who knows how many M kids there are running around the Hatch household?
That's right. Can you think of any other names besides Marty and Mary that are close enough? I don't know.
Margaret, Martha.
No,
Maggie.
I'm just right. No, but I was talking about, you know, that they use the same letters. Martha, actually, Martha would fit in there, you know, because it's just quickly changing the a few of the letters. Yeah.
Okay. Martha, Marta. Martin.
Well, no, Martin and Marty are the same ones, so you know. Yeah. Who knows?
You spell it with a Y instead, it could be a girl's name. Who knows these days?
That's true. But I doubt in 1928, you know, that they did that.
M-A-A-R-T-Y-N.
It reminds me of have you seen L.A. Story with Steve Martin?
No,
Okay, so
I haven't.
there's a scene where he's out on a date with Sarah Jessica Parker's character, and he's asking her out, and then he asks her what her name is, and she goes, "Oh, my name is Sandy," and he goes, "Oh, I'm so happy to finally meet someone who has a normal name." And he starts giving some examples of crazy names. And then she says, "Yeah, Sandy, big S, little A, little N, big D, little E, big E." Just to show how names in the early 90s could be a little bit crazy. I've always loved that movie. I think it's a fun movie. Except for the whole thing with the traffic sign talking to him is a little too much. But besides that, it's got some great sight gags in throughout the movie.
I just always think of I'm pretty sure it's in the Incredible Hulk series. With Tatiana, what's her face from Orphan Black, but there's a character's like Crystal with a Y, but not where you think it is. That's how she always introduces herself.
You're talking about the She-Hulk.
She Hulk,
Oh,
She
okay.
Hulk, thank you.
I thought you were talking about the Lou Ferrigno. I was going all the way back there, to the Bill Bixby. I don't see anyone listed as Crystal here on IMDb, but maybe it was someone who was only in one episode
Maybe
or
it's
something
not
like that.
Crystal. Maybe it's something else, but.
So that's pretty much all I have for this minute. Next week we will have lots more to talk about when the two of them continue their little game.
Well, I can't leave It's a Wonderful Life without mentioning the trauma that we all suffered when I went and got my master's in library science. This film is a little bit of a reputation amongst librarians as not being the best because
Because
the
they
idea that
say
the
that she's
worst
an old
thing that
maid.
could possibly happen to you. And it's one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, she's an old maid and she's about to close up the library. It's the drama. So she's about to close up the library. And we're all like, she has our dream job. Shut up. So
And
it
think about
had to
it,
be
she's
mentioned.
not that old at that point either, when she's referred to as an old maid. Because okay, we've now established how we can actually figure out how old she is in that scene. If she was born in 1909, because she's actually no, if she's 18, she was born in 1910 even.
1911.
No, this is
Okay.
1928. So let's say she's either born in 1909 or 1910. Depending on when her birthday falls out. Okay, so it could be she was 18 going on 19 or whatever. And the main part of the movie happens in December 1945. Okay, so therefore she is in her mid 30s when she is considered an old maid. And they obviously in that scene, which we will talk about many months from now, she looks a lot older than someone in her 30s.
And they act like this is the worst thing that could ever have happened to a woman.
That's right. This is the worst thing that can
But
happen
again,
to Mary
that
Hatch.
is very far in your future.
Yes.
Very far in your future. But
Not that far. I'll
I
get
would
there. I'll
not be
get there.
representing the library community well if I didn't mention it.
Okay. All right. So anyone who is interested in hearing those minutes, if you don't want to stick around and wait until you can hear them, so you can, jump ahead and come and listen to week 25, which is episodes 121 to 125, which will be in the middle of April. But I still want you to listen all the way until then. At that point we'll see what we think of Tierney's comment. Don't worry, Tierney, I agree with you. It's fine.
Yeah, it'll age well.
Yes, it will. All right. So every Friday we have a segment called Oscar Oops. So the idea behind this segment is the fact that in all the years of Oscar, there are always years where people will think that the voters got it wrong and which movie they think should have won instead of what actually won. And the only caveat here is it must be something that was actually nominated for Best Picture that year. This movie itself is a clear example of that, where there are a lot of people who believe that it should have won Best Picture in 1946. It actually was a box office flop. Most people didn't like it back then. It only took until, the 70s for people to start appreciating this movie much more than they did. But the fact that they at least nominated it shows that there were people who were able to recognize that this is a great movie. Again, I'm not going into the debate of whether this is better than The Best Years of Our Lives. You'll have to wait until the final episode to hear what I think about that one. But so Tierney, what have you got for us? Start with your number five and work your way up.
All right. So I had to kind of look at it the other way around because, like you said, there are so many movies that have been nominated that could have won Best Picture. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. But I couldn't, like, it was too overwhelming. So what I looked at were the movies where I looked at what won Best Picture that year and thought, are you kidding me? And then I looked and saw what was nominated. And in some cases, I was like, yeah, no, I guess I can see it. That makes sense. Like Gigi. I was like, Gigi won Best Picture. And then I'm like, okay, well, this canceled out and this wasn't as. So, okay, fine. So I looked for the most egregious, are you kidding me, things that were missed. And you know what? Apocalypse Now is not on the list. Spoiler alert for people who thought I was going to come here and talk about how it should have beat Kramer versus Kramer. Kramer versus Kramer is a great movie, and even if it hadn't, I think Breaking Away or Norma Rae would have had a better shot that year. Anyway, all right. So, number five. Is that how we're doing things? Okay, I'm gonna have it as a tie only because I'm not like trying to weasel out. It's that I did not see the movie that did win Best Picture this year. And so I felt kind of funny saying, oh, this should have won. But the fact that Judas and the Black Messiah did not win, I think is a crime. That year, Nomadland won. And here's the thing, I didn't see Nomadland. And Frances McDormand is pretty dang awesome. So if I am in the wrong there and know it absolutely is the Best Picture winner, then I would say I would have taken 1968's Romeo and Juliet over Oliver.
Wait a second. That's your number five. Which is your, now you've confused me as to which is your number five.
Number five is it could be Judas and the Black Messiah, or it could be Romeo and Juliet.
Okay. Now
just
that
because,
Romeo
like
and
I said.
Juliet has always been stuck in my mind because in seventh grade they showed our English teacher showed it to us, and the idea of showing a movie with full frontal nudity, or to a bunch of 12 and 13-year-olds. I don't know about that one.
No, it's absolutely wonderful, and that's fair. And I have nothing against Oliver, but sure, we'll go with that if I'm wrong about Nomadland. Number four is Black Swan. Only because Black Swan lost to The King's Speech, which is a wonderful movie. I love the movie The King's Speech. But really, you're going to give Best Picture to The King's Speech over Black Swan? Are you kidding me? Number three is Life is Beautiful, which did win a lot of Oscars, but it didn't win Best Picture. And boy, howdy, should Life is Beautiful have won Best Picture instead of Shakespeare in Love? Another movie that I love. It's not a Best Picture. Come on, what are we doing here, people? Number two, and my most egregious, this should have won instead. Black Panther. Now, I know Black Panther was never going to win Best Picture. I accept that. But it lost Best Picture to Green Book. Are you kidding me? No. Black Panther. And number one in my, are you kidding me, Oscar oops, is Goodfellas. Goodfellas lost to Dances with Wolves. Dances with Wolves was only made to be freaking Oscar bait. And Goodfellas is amazing. And should have been a Best Picture.
Okay.
That's my list.
That is a great list. I don't agree with all of them, but I completely understand where you're going. Let's put it this way. Of the ones that you mentioned, three out of five of them, I definitely agree that those movies should not have won Best Picture. You know, who should have won, I think, is
See,
something else. I mean, for me,
that's
and this is
when
no
I was.
surprise for anyone who knows me, definitely Shakespeare in Love should not have won because I thought Saving Private Ryan should have won. But, you know, we won't say where that will be on my list. You
Yeah.
know.
That's because when I was looking at like the 40s and 50s, there were so many where the nominations where I was like, oh my God, that could have won, that could have won, that could have won. And then I look at what did win and I'm like, okay, but I get it. Like, is it what I would have chosen? No, but it's not a like Oscar oops.
Correct. All right, for sure.
So,
For sure.
yeah.
Okay, that is definitely fair. So, thank you very much for that for that list and for your explanations. So, Tierney, would you like one final time this season to explain to people where they can find Tierney Steele?
Huzzah! Well, I am Tierney Steele, and I mentioned I have a sister, and so I am One Steele Sister on social media and at the website onesteelsister.com. And I've been doing this podcasting thing since 2017. I started recording in 2016. And it just keeps going. So check me out there. And thanks for having me on. This is a really fun group of minutes.
Well, you chose them, so that works. That helps, you know, when you know which minutes you want. So, but I will, you know, at least let people know that you were debating between this week and next week. You know, you didn't know which one you wanted to
Yes.
take. So, you know, I but
I think
I
I chose well. I mean, I got
that's what I
to
was
go to
about
the
to say. I
Smithsonian
think
a
you chose.
lot, and that's super fun. Yes.
I was gonna say that. I think you chose well. You know. I will not say you chose poorly. You chose poorly. All right.
Chose wisely.
That's right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie on Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on my website, movieonminute.com, and you can find me on Twitter slash X. So Tierney, thank you very much for joining me this week. I really enjoyed myself. I learned a lot. Hope you did too. Hope you enjoyed yourself. And I hope you had a
Definitely.
fun
Thank you so
time.
much.
That's the important thing.
Yeah.
All right. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, hot dog.
Hot dog, like an
I
organ.
love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow. Life with its tears.